Welcome to the Pin Down, your Detroit Pistons podcast. I'm your host, Wes Davenport from Motor City Hoops and Detroit Bad Boys.
And I'm Blake Silverman, writer for Detroit Bad Boys, covering everything from the Pistons to the NBA draft and the Motor City Cruise.
Blake, man, we got a lot of sports news going on. I mean, the Tigers are in spring training. We got the Lions are making some moves in free agency. Who knows what's going on with the Red Wings right now? But hey, the Pistons have won some games. They've won three out of their last four, which three out of the last six if we count since that stinker in Orlando. But you know, three out of four sounds better. So let's focus on that.
Yeah, exactly. And I was planning to bring this up a little bit later in the episode, but it was Taj Gibson really like the key to unlocking this on that 10-day deal? I think it's up after Friday's game, so we'll see if he gets another one. But it seems like he's been huge in the locker room, even though he hasn't seen the floor.
Well, I mean, obviously the veteran presence can be a bit unquantifiable at times. It does seem like he's had a positive impact on James Wiseman at a minimum, which is good. I mean, a lot of this is probably Fontecchio and not Grimes because he hasn't played much, but just getting that the two-way player was probably pretty helpful. But look, here's the last four games. I want to read off the score and then I wanted to talk about one thing I've really noticed, and it's been not just over the last four games or five games, but you know, even going back just more generally since the All-Star break. But before we hit that, so you have the 118-112 victory over the Brooklyn Nets. They followed that up with a 142-124 loss to the Dallas Mavericks, then a 114-97 win over the Hornets, and a 113-104 win over the Raptors on Wednesday night. So again, that's three out of the last four. Extend that back a little bit, three out of six, which is the sixth game being the pretty poor performance in Orlando. No matter how you shake that out, that's about 500, if not better, basketball. This is easily probably the best stretch of basketball we've seen them play this year. Am I wrong?
No, definitely. Yeah, I think things have made a bit more sense, like rotationally, even with like Asar Thompson missing some time. Like, I mean, debatably Simone Fontecchio should be a starter on this team as it is, but slotting him in when Thompson is out was pretty seamless. I mean, Fontecchio had an off game shooting wise against in the win against Toronto, but still, it's not like they didn't seem very thin. And I guess just how Monty Williams has handled the bench unit and getting guys in and out against Toronto, it was a little bit tough to watch when Cade Cunningham wasn't really closing the game, but Marcus Sasser was rolling and we saw that, and thankfully they were able to pull it out. So it definitely at a minimum seems like things are at least making more sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And the end of that Toronto game, per Isaiah Stewart, it sounds like Cade Cunningham basically told Monty that he's sitting the rest of the way because Marcus Sasser is hot, which, look, I mean, I respect that as a leader, right? I mean, he was playing really well. Cade's been playing out of his mind since the All-Star break. I think he's up over 25 points and eight rebounds per game over this stretch. Like he's playing incredible basketball, and he was playing very good against Toronto as well. But Marcus Sasser did catch fire, as he's been known to do. He's a little bit of a firecracker or a microwave there off the bench. And look, they extended the lead up over, I think, 13 points at the time. I get it. And that's kind of a vet move by the young leader of this team and Cade Cunningham. So, you know, quickly, I guess, what were your thoughts on that? Because I honestly really loved it. I loved hearing that.
Yeah. I mean, that's great. I mean, you don't really hear that often from a guy who's in year three. And I mean, I think it's just big for Marcus Sasser in general. Like, as you mentioned, he's not going to do that every game. We've seen him go through streaks where he can't miss and then other times where he can't find a bucket. So I think when he's going, it's important to keep him on the floor because, I mean, just for like a rookie, that's important. He seems very confident as it is, but seeing the ball go through the net just builds that confidence even more and more. And just to have your leader to have the wherewithal to say like, hey, this guy's rolling. Let's leave him in. We can finish things out with him on the floor and me on the bench. Like, I feel like you don't really see that often. So it was great to see, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely, right? It's selfless team player, all the things that we thought we knew about Cade Cunningham, and then he actually exhibits it there, helps out his young rook, and gives him some confidence. So I agree, that was great to see. But let's talk for a minute here about the non-Cade Cunningham minutes. I'm going to pull these from the last five games. So this player, just in general, but recently Monty's been staggering this player and Cade Cunningham more, which has been nice. But in each game, going back five games, 5 of 13 from the floor versus Toronto, 4 of 13 from the floor versus Charlotte, 7 of 21 against Dallas, 10 of 17 against Brooklyn, 6 of 15 versus Miami. That's going five games back. And this is, of course, Jaden Ivey. That's 40% from the floor over the stretch. It's worse from three. He's taken 31 total attempts from three, 25% on those attempts. And that 31, split it out per game, that's 6 attempts per game. On the season, he's only at 4.5 or 4.7. He's never exceeded 4.7 between this season and last as well. So he's also shooting 37% from the mid-range. In the month of March, he has an effective field goal percentage of 42.5. Which, for our listeners, if you're not aware of that statistic, it's just a weighted field goal percentage. 42.5 is very bad. All right, it's not good. Usually, you want to be at or above 50. So 42.5 is quite bad. But listen, here's my point. I don't think there's a way of getting around this. Jaden Ivey is shooting bad shots. He's shooting shots he shouldn't be taking, and he's not making them. And it's a little bit worse, because he is shooting 67% from the rim, which is something we were begging to see from him, see improvement from him in the offseason. So my question to you is Jaden Ivey just settling too much for these shots, or is this a scheme issue? What's going on? Why is he shooting so poorly from the floor? And again, he is taking bad shots. There's no two ways about that.
Yeah, it almost looks a little to me like the shots he's taking are a bit predetermined. I guess using the win against Toronto as an example, like I noticed a handful of times where he drove to the rim and put up like just not a great shot with a defender draped all over him. It, just tough shots in general that he wasn't able to convert on. I mean, sometimes he does. He can definitely make tough shots, but just his whole, like, the shots he's putting up and his efficiency has been very confusing over the past like period of time. I mean, he had that stretch where he went crazy. He was making it seemed like everything from three, no matter where he was on the floor. But he's definitely been going through a bit of a slump, which I think is definitely a very valid concern, because that's been a question with him up until he had that stretch where he went crazy. And it's just like, was that for real? Is that sustainable? Or is he not going to be like a highly efficient guy from the field, no matter if it's mid-range, at the rim, from three, which I feel like we need him to be. If he's not going to be a knockdown, lights out shooter, he at least needs to do better than what we've seen over the past stretch of games. So yeah, I think it is a bit of just like maybe not finding the right shot. I know he can. It just seems like a little, either he finds it, gets the ball on the perimeter and he has a clean look and he takes it, or he like just determines automatically that he's going to drive and put the shot up no matter what, which we know isn't always the right decision. So I'm hoping there's something schematically that can be changed, but right now it looks like he just needs to be a little more, I guess, fluid in his decision-making, if that makes sense.
It does. And, you know, I think that's a good call. You know, I'm thinking right now back to my evaluation of him in that draft process. And I was a really, really big fan of Jaden Ivey that year. I still am. I'm still a big Jaden Ivey fan. And but thinking back to his time in Purdue, you know, these shots that he's taking, the transition threes that he probably shouldn't, some of the pull-up mid-range shots, like they were there at Purdue, but they weren't at this quantity. He wasn't shooting them so often. And you know, your instinct is to say, well, maybe the spacing's just worse, right, in the NBA now, or at least over the stretch when he's playing a lot of minutes with Asar Thompson and Jalen Duren. But Purdue plays two bigs, and one of the, or at least at the time they did, and one of the, you know, things that was good to flag and be aware of with Jaden Ivey at the time was that he was playing in not a lot of space at all. Now, obviously, there's a huge leap, right, from college to NBA athletes, so maybe that plays a part of it. But my point is, he had these shots. He wasn't taking them at the volume. So to me, it looks like now that he's taking so many of them, I'm not sure if he's settling for them or if he's being specifically schemed into these positions. Truthfully, it could probably be a mix of both. Like, so he took a transition three pretty early in that game against Toronto. He had a lane to the hoop. Like, there was no reason for him to let that one fly. He should have just driven it. In fact, over the past five games where he's taking about 6.5 attempts from three per game, I would argue even if Jaden Ivey gets to the point where he's, you know, shooting 37-38% from three one day, he really shouldn't be shooting six attempts from three per game. 4-5 is a pretty perfect level for him. Make that your counter. That should never be his primary mode of attack. So, you know, I think you're probably right. There's probably a bit of programming that's going on there, pre-programming, that is. He's planning ahead and forcing. At the same time, you know, if he was forcing things at the rim, I'd be a lot happier right now. So that question, that space between is this just who he is, or are they intentionally getting him these shots? I think it's a really tough one to figure out, and that's going to have a lot of implications for the future with his fit with Cade.
Yeah, 100%. And it, like, sort of what we were talking about with Sasser, like, it might also be a bit of a confidence thing. Like, if he's not seeing the shot falling down right now, he could be second guessing if he gets an open shot on the perimeter, or if he should be driving something, whatever it is. Like, I feel like when we see slumps like that, you have to question if, like, not to pick on Ivy, because I think like every basketball player does this, but if they're overthinking things, and that really can be a scary, I guess, road to go down and something that's hard to get out of. So I think that might be a bit of an element as well. But yeah, I think if we learned anything this season, it's if you're playing like Cade and Ivy alongside each other, you need to like find a way to get both those guys their shots. I think Cade's pretty good at creating his own shot. But maybe there's just a little more that goes into it with someone like Jaden Ivey. And if it's Cade that has to be that guy to take more on it to create perfect shots for Ivy, or if Ivy needs to self-create, that's like a different conversation. But I do think there needs to be a bit more intention in whether it's Ivy personally or the rest of the team, like finding him the right shots to get him going again.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. I want to say though quickly, and Blake, please, like if you disagree, let me know and tell me. But I'm not sure this is just the slump. All right, this has been since that stretch that you mentioned where he was hot from three over, I think, you know, maybe a week and a half stretch. So that probably amounts to four to six games, something in that range. He was hot. He was shooting the leather off the ball. It was incredible. It was really fun to watch. His scoring took a leap. He was really efficient. But since that time, his shot selection is different right now. Like, I think that's why it's standing out to me so much, because he's gone through stretches earlier this season and even back into his rookie year where the three-pointer just wasn't falling, but he was still getting to the rim. He was still getting to the free throw line. Right now, not only is the three-point shot not falling, or at least, you know, to be generous, has been streaky, right? Because he did have that night against Brooklyn where I think he hit six. So let's be generous. Let's say it's streaky. He's not getting all the way to the rim with the same frequency. He's not getting to the line at the same frequency. Like his approach is different. And that's concerning to me for a guy that is so athletic and is so built offensively around the idea that he's going to finish around the rim and he's going to get to the free throw line. And because he's going to draw so much attention when he gets into the lane, kickouts are pretty easy reads. Like that's Jaden Ivey's mold. And he's been really good at that mold this year. But now all of a sudden he's not doing it. And I just don't know why. It concerns me a little bit. I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair. I mean, I'm not saying that you're totally out on like Ivy or anything, but I think the other side of that, like, it's a real concern that him as a shooter, him as a creator, just him being effective offensively. I think the other side is, though, that we have seen flashes. Like, I don't want to keep going back to that one run, but we saw it in his rookie year as well, where he was able to shoot the ball a bit. It looked like he was finding and taking the right shots. I feel like those flashes have been more infrequent than the latter, but I'm still optimistic just because we have seen him like really shoot at a very like effective rate for short stretches. So I'm hoping he can find ways to prolong that, I guess. I'm not really sure the way to it or how he gets out of what this is, whether it's personnel changes, playing him in different scenarios or different actions, or if it's just like taking finding better shots, just building confidence, however he needs to do it, whether it's some way this year, some way in the off season, working on something, tweaking something minor with his shot, or just doing something so his process, he processes things a little bit differently in a game. Like, I think it's still there, but it's definitely like a very valid concern that it really has been since his rookie season as well.
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. And I definitely agree with everything you just said to how to get him back into a rhythm. I am very much a believer in Jaden Ivey, the player. Just for full transparency for all of our listeners, what is making me nervous right now is the potential that this is a scheme thing and that these are in shots that are intentionally or have intentionally been created for Jaden Ivey. Like if this is how we're going to use a shooting guard in Monty Williams's offense, you can count me as nervous moving forward about how this is going to work. But we've spent a lot of time on Jaden Ivey, so let's go to the other draft classmate of Jaden Ivey that the Pistons got that year, Jalen Duren. We got a couple of questions on Jalen Duren, and actually we were already planning to talk about his stretch here over the past, you know, four or five games, where he's been very good in some ways and pretty bad in others. So let's just run through all of these questions, and then we can kind of take it wherever you want. So this is from KCP43, and it's through in the DBB comments. It says, where are we with Jalen Duren, Omari, Bryce, and Laz? Shout out to the Pistons Pulse.
Yeah, shout out to all you guys. Shout out to you too, Wes.
Yeah. Yeah, pat on the back. It was a fantastic episode. I had a great time. Anyway, so Omari, Bryce, and Laz had a really good discussion about what Jalen Duren is without improving on the defensive end. Depending on where you land with Duren and or Ivy, do you move on? We've got this one from Black Swan. Do you think that we'll see Jalen Duren attempt to develop a three-point shot? How much does his ceiling on this roster change if he does get a three-point shot? And One from Steve T here in our live chat. What are your upside comps for Jalen Duren on offense only? So we have a lot of questions about Jalen Duren. So why don't we start here? Over the past five games, we've gotten probably the full Jalen Duren experience. There's been a lot of highs, a lot of lows, a lot of everything in between. What have been your takeaways or, I guess, things to monitor for the future out of this recent stretch of basketball that we've seen out of him?
Yeah, and I mean, look, you can't say enough about what Duren does to contribute to this team, like how he looks next to Cade Cunningham, the way he rebounds the ball, the way he is like effective toward the rim, even like the playmaking flashes that he's shown. He's very like, he had 5 assists against the Raptors in addition to his 24 points and 23 rebounds. And you can't say enough about the rebounding. Like, securing possession is critical. It's needed. He's shown an ability to do that. He's definitely gotten beat for some offensive rebounds on the defensive end of the floor. Like, I feel like the one thing that you can harp on and is probably the biggest concern with Duren is his defense and improving on there. I'm just trying to figure out like what the answer is to getting him better on that end. I'm not sure if it's just as simple as making better reads, being in better positioning, or if he's just not the type that's going to be a staunch defensive center in the NBA. Also, I just think like the turnovers, man, like he has to cut that down. In addition to what he did, like those 24 points and 23 rebounds, he also turned the ball over 5 times against Toronto. We've seen that a bunch over the past stretch, and that's just not something that you can have from your center. So I think if you're, I just want to be very sure that I'm not like downplaying or disregarding all like the positives he does, because he's a great player. He does great things. His fit next to Cade looks great right now, but just like the turnovers and the defense, it has to be a conversation, and it has to be something that gets better. I'm not exactly sure what the immediate path is to do it, but it definitely has to be a focus in these last like 15 to 20 games, and certainly over the off season for him.
All right. So I'm going to throw a lot of stats and context at you, and I promise it's going to end up in a question at the end. So here's where I want to take it. First of all, let's just quick shout out to JD here. All right. I believe he leads the NBA in 2020 games or in double doubles.
And probably
he's
dunks,
been very
right?
impactful. And probably dunks. I can't imagine anyone else being all that close. He's been very impactful around the rim. He's been very impactful as a scorer, and he has been a tremendous rebounder for the Pistons this season. That being said, defense hasn't been good. All right. So he's a good rebounder, but he doesn't box out all that often. Gives up quite a bit of offensive rebounds, which you mentioned. That's not necessarily a negative. He's very young. That's not unique to him. A lot of young guys don't. Okay. He's got a total of only 5 stocks, which is steals and blocks combined, over the past 5 games. Of those, there's only 1 block. So that's 1 block, 1 block shot in 5 games. He's also been generally poor as an individual defender and with pick and roll as well. All right. He's also, over the past 5 games, averaged more than 3 turnovers per game. For context, Cade Cunningham, who has the ball obviously a lot more than Jalen Duren, over the same span, 3.6. All right. So that'll illustrate for just proportionately how much more Duren's turning the ball over. So basically, what we've got is a really young player who's super athletic, has a ton of potential. Right now, he's just a very good play finisher, and he kind of moonlights as a playmaker and hasn't had all that much success so far with it. he's a decent rebounder, mostly because of his athletic gifts, but he's not a good defender. So if we're looking at him as an archetype of player, just as a prospect still, because he is, he's still very much a prospect. He's not a finished product. A guy who doesn't look like he's going to be Joel Embiid on offense, but also isn't going to be Bam Adebayo on defense. What role is there for that guy ideally in the NBA? So to put it another way, what's the role for a big man who's not an offensive hub, but he's also a pretty poor defender?
Yeah, the issue with that is I feel like it pigeonholes teams into what you can put next to him. Like, you have to, I mean, it's perfect to have Asar Thompson, I guess. Like, if he's your long-term starter, he's going to be the best defender on the lineup. Can he guard up to guys that Jalen Duren should be guarding in most situations? Like, no, you need a big man to guard that. But I think if you're going to keep Duren as your long-term center, you need to have a really good defensive big as your probably like first man off the bench. If that's that guy's already on the roster, if his name is Isaiah Stewart, like maybe that works. It still might be a little bit undersized as a center, but we know everything he does on defense. So I don't know. I like there's clearly a role for him. Like on the offensive side, he does great things, but do you, in an organization that we've heard so much that we're focusing on defense, like is, I guess, pigeonholing your starting five to needing to put very strong defenders next to him, like does that outweigh just bringing someone else in who's more of a defensive minded big? I don't know. It's a tough debate. I'm not sure where I'm at right now because he like jumps off the floor, off the screen, wherever you're watching the game when you literally see him play, the things he does. But yeah, it's just defense. And sometimes, like we saw in the game against Dallas, what those like defensive mistakes or like frustrations sort of hinder what he can do on offense, whether it's getting into foul trouble and taking yourself out of the game. That frustration shove he had that led to the technicals and ejection, like those things will happen. I don't think that specific example is a big long-term concern, but if he is like getting beat or not able to secure possessions, giving up offensive rebounds and easy putbacks, like is like, I think it's clear he should be a starter on this team and like across the league, but it just, the team context is very important here because it's, are you willing to give up defense for everything he does on offense, which maybe a lot of teams would, but will Detroit do that is what I'm debating in my head.
Well, and with that team, you know, context part, I think you're completely right. It means they need to be creative. What you see most at most other teams in the league is you have a big where you can kind of funnel things to, because newsflash, perimeter defense is really hard when you can't touch the guy at all. All right. So what teams have been doing is trying to funnel guys down to one or two players that can then contest the shot and grab the rebound, if not outright block it. If Jalen Duren can't be that guy, then you probably really need to invest in the perimeter defense, which, like you said, Asar Thompson really helps with that. I mean, ideally, Jaden Ivey probably helps with that eventually. He's made strides as a defender. But in a league where, you know, perimeter defense is not stylistically the league-approved method of playing defense, shall we say, it's kind of a tough line to draw. Like, Yeah, I don't know where this all goes. Maybe he can figure it out. Maybe he makes a big step. I mean, we've got a good question here from Keep Khan. It says, you know, what's simple, something simple that he can do to improve his defense? I mean, I think the answer is just keeping his arms up, having active hands consistently on that end. I mean, that would help with his screen and roll defense and drop coverage. But that would help, you know, just he's big, he's long. That he'd be in passing lanes if he's roaming under the hoop. He's at least up and in the way, you know, visually for a guy taking a layup if he's not going to go up and contest it. Like, that would help. I don't know how much, but it'd be a little thing. It's tough. I don't think there's a simple answer to this one, which is why I wanted to ask you to see if you had one for me.
Yeah, and something when I'm thinking about, like, little things he can do, like, I feel like you have to go to focus areas. And, like, one thing that we've brought up here is giving up offensive rebounds. I think one thing that rebounders can do is just, I mean, read the shot. It's all about anticipation, like long shots, long rebounds, and sort of just like keeping your eye on the ball, I guess, sort of anticipating where it's going to be. I'm sure that's something he already does and he's working on, but maybe there's ways that he can improve more there just to get in the right spots to secure rebounds and secure possession and eliminate the opportunity for the other team to get second chance points. I mean, when you're talking about improving as a defender, I think there's so many little things that you can do to get better, whether it's just like moving your feet better or something like anticipation wise, like in your head, things like that. But I think if we're also going to, we know giving up O boards is a big thing that we want him to focus on. So maybe it's just getting in the right spot. Like, I know he's already trying to do that, and maybe it is a little bit of a size thing going up against bigger guys for him, but that's another like simple thing that sort of stuck out to me with this question.
Keith Black Trudeau brings this up on Twitter all the time. Shout out to him, guys. If you're not following him, you should. He's got a lot of good history stuff, a lot of fun. But he brings up a really good point, which supports what you're saying. And that's just that, look, defensive rebounding is a possession ender, which is the end of the defensive possession. You know, it sounds simple, but a very, very good defensive rebounder really helps your defense. So the one thing that he could really do there is box out consistently. And if you're looking, like QT is here, for hope for the 20-year-old Jalen Duren, look at Andre Drummond. Andre Drummond, when he was young and with the Pistons, he was an athlete. He didn't really box out all that much, relied on his athleticism, his timing, things that he was great at, and he was a great rebounder because of it. He didn't really need to box out. Now, according to Basketball Index, which is another Twitter account that most of the time has some interesting stats, he's up near the top of the league in box out percentage, which means he's one of the league's most consistent box outers. Like, he's changed. He's figured it out, right? So, yeah, I mean, Duren's only 20. There's definitely hope there. I think for, like, the little consistency things where it's not necessarily a processing thing. It's just about doing the thing correctly over and over and over again with rigorous consistency. I think there's absolutely hope that he can figure all of that out. But let's go to this question here. Let's stay in the front court. This is from Hunt Baker in the DBB comment section. He asks, has Isaiah Stewart shown enough to be one of the starting five moving forwards, or does he need to be the top big man off the bench? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think defensively he has. He's shown an ability to operate around the perimeter, like shoot the ball at somewhat. Like, we know he can shoot it. We don't know how consistently. We don't know if teams are really going to bite and really close out on him on the perimeter. But I think the concern with him as your Stu as your long-term starting five is just it, like, size. We know he's like a force down low, everything like that, but there are going to be matchups where there's going to be a bigger guy on the other end of that matchup. Is having an Asar Thompson next to Stewart enough to eliminate that concern? Like, I just don't know, I guess, at his size, his frame, his length, if he can be just a starting five man in the NBA. I think I would love him as the first man off the bench. I know you would too, Wes. But yeah, I just think like the matchups that you get on different nights, like it could work well against some teams, like other teams, it probably could not. So I think it could, but not, I guess, just in general as your long-term, like he's our starting five and let's go.
Implicit in your answer was an assumption that I think I have as well, but it's worth bringing up. And that's that Isaiah Stewart is not a four in the NBA. He's a five. Ideally, he's a combo big. And I do think that he is a combo big where you can play him for minutes at the four, but the majority of his minutes should be at the five. And I think that this season has kind of proven that to some extent. You know, I think something that I personally really underrated about this transition that he was making to the forward position, you know, over the offseason was that, you know, it's not just about his shooting. It's about him being able to put the ball on the floor and make someone pay for a hard closeout. And while I do trust Isaiah Stewart's shot, and I do trust him to pump fake and sidestep to get a cleaner look on a jump shot, he's shown that quite a bit already this season, and it's looked really good. I don't trust him to put the ball on the floor and drive at all. I mean, it's ended in plenty of charges and turnovers and bad passes all season long, and it really impacts the spacing on the court and the things that you can get away with while guarding him specifically. You know, you can run out on him. So that means you can help quite a bit. I honestly think that's part of the reason why we point to while we're watching the games that, hey, the other team isn't treating him like an incredible shooter. It's because he doesn't have a counter to that shot. You right. Sprint at him and you make him put the ball on the floor and you've won. You've won the possession. So, look, I think Isaiah Stewart is a really, really high level backup big. I think he can play at a high level at both positions. I think that the backup spot for the five man, the size is much less of a concern.
Yep.
So, like, ideally, yeah, I'm with you. I think he's the first big off the bench, and truthfully, I think he'd excel in that role. Do you have any more thoughts before we move on to another one?
No, that's exactly where I'm at with it too. Like, that's my ideal role for him. I think right now we're not really seeing it a ton just because we want his defensive ability in the starting lineup, but I'm hopeful that long term that could be the answer for him, because I think that's a great role, and I don't think it's necessarily a demotion either. Like, it's a really important role on any team, and we've heard the rumblings around the trade deadline that a bunch of contenders wanted him to probably do something similar. So I hope that's what it is long term for the Pistons too.
All right, so this next one here is actually kind of a combo question. We got a question, multiple questions about Quentin Grimes. One from Hunt Baker in the DBB comments, another from @BasePistons on Twitter. So I'll read off Hunt's question first and then move on to Base Pistons. We're going to address both of these. But is the guard rotation deep enough with just Sasser and Grimes off the bench? And then Base Pistons on Twitter is asking, what do you need to see from Quentin Grimes as the season closes down in order for you to feel comfortable with his role next season? And presumably that role is next to Marcus Sasser off the bench.
Yeah. I think first, just to address like Base Pistons question, I think it's the shot with Grimes. It hasn't looked good. I was hopeful that a role change coming to Detroit would be like a simple switch for him, but it really hasn't. I know he's been fighting through some injuries. Like, we haven't seen him play a ton of games, so that definitely goes into it as well. But I think if we can see him shoot the ball a bit better and be more of that like 3-and-D archetype that we want him and I guess kind of need him to be, that would give me hope for like what he is going into the off season and what he can be on the team. And then as for like Sasser and Grimes as your backup guards in the second unit, I don't know if it's necessarily enough, but I'm just saying that because I don't really know if Marcus Sasser really needs to be your lead guard off the bench. I think he can do some off ball stuff that we've seen. And like, really, the role that Sasser excels in and will for the future to me is that microwave scorer off the bench, a guy you can go to who's hopefully can get you a bucket. And then once he gets you one bucket, then you never know where the end is from there. And if the other guard that you're playing in the second unit is like staggering Cade and Jaden Ivey, or if it's someone else you bring in, then that works too. Someone just to control your offense, make plays as well. Of course, you need that like third guard as you need, like what Malachi Flynn is right now. Who knows if that's going to be him for the long term or even next season. But just someone like that as well. So yeah, like the backup backcourt of Grimes and Sasser, I don't really know is just it for the future, but that's not necessarily to me, like because of who they are as players. I think it's just because of the roles that they play, and they can really be like complementary guys in the second unit.
I share all of those exact concerns. Actually, you took the words out of my mouth with Sasser being more of an off-ball guy. I really think he is. I at this point, I don't even view him as a point guard. I think he's a scoring guard, pure and simple. Yeah, he's undersized, but man, if he catches fire like he did near the end against Toronto, like you've got something there, right? So I do think he needs to be playing next to a primary guard. It is concerning to me that in the minutes that Sasser and Grimes have gotten together, you've seen Grimes take a lot of the ball handling duties. We talked about it right after that trade happened. Quentin Grimes is not good out of DHOs. He's not good in isolation. He's not good in the pick and roll. That all went back before he came to the Pistons with his time in New York. All of that has followed absolutely through in the minutes that he's played in Detroit. The jump shot, I'm kind of giving him a pass on. Like, look, he gets a lot of elevation on that shot, and he has a lower body injury that seems to be nagging. It's been bugging him all year. Yeah, he's been cold. He's definitely in a slump. He has many, many seasons of proven work as a good shooter. So I'm not too worried about the shot. Now, what I'll say about them together off the bench as your backup guards, like as a pairing, is that I think I am comfortable with those two moving into next season, mostly because I expect Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey to be staggered pretty often. So practically, and honestly, this probably goes for most of the bench just in general. All right. You know, you don't need your bench to fit well necessarily together. More importantly is how those bench players individually fit with starters. So I think, you know, Marcus Sasser is a fantastic fit next to Cade Cunningham. He's a feisty defender. He's a good shooter, and he's streaky. He can get really hot. That looks really great next to a big playmaker like Cade. Quentin Grimes is a very nice fit next to Jaden Ivey. Jaden Ivey can handle a lot of those on-ball reps. He's athletic enough to get a lot of like gravity as he gets into the paint, kicking out to ideally a wide open Quentin Grimes for a shot. And then Quentin Grimes is good enough to, you know, do a catch and go if a guy runs at him too forcefully. So, you know, that kind of limits his ball handling reps in that way. And I think that's probably the most important part, right? I mean, Grimes and Sasser aren't going to play too many minutes next to each other. So do they fit perfectly? No, but they look really good individually next to Cade and Ivy. And I think that's probably the more important piece. So yeah, I'd be totally comfortable with both of those two guys coming off the bench.
Yeah. Yeah. Me as well. I don't know if it's necessary. Like you said, like you don't have to play them next to each other all the time, but I think they're good guys that you can go to, and hopefully Grimes' shot comes along. Like you said, it's a little bit of a pass this season. But yeah, both of them do different things, and like Sasser is just that guy that can go get a bucket that you can go to whenever, which you need. Like, it's important to have guys like that when maybe someone else isn't able to find it that night. So yeah, I'm with you there.
All right, so this next question here is from Hunt Baker again in the DBB comments. Hunt, man, thank you for all of these questions.
Yes,
I don't think we're going to have time to hit on all of them, but he sent a good, like, 8, I think it was. We have all of them in our outline. We're just not going to have time. So we really appreciate it. These were all really good. And a lot of big man talk this week, which is kind of fun. We talked about Duren. We talked about Stewart. Let's talk about James Wiseman having a little bit of a resurgence here. You said maybe because of Taj Gibson, who knows? But Hunt says, has James Wiseman developed enough to make the Pistons want to re-sign him? And can they offer him enough to entice him to stay? Now, we kind of touched on this last week, but I do think it's worth bringing up again because of how strongly he's played over the past 4 games. So, what do you think, Blake? I mean, the development that we've seen from James Wiseman, first, is it, you know, real enough that he's a backup big if he continues to play exactly like he has over these past 4 games, or is it not? And then two, given this new stretch of basketball, assuming it becomes consistent, do you want to keep him?
Man, James Wiseman is really making this tough for me. I think on our last episode, I said, like, I just don't think it's worth it to re-sign him. Like, I mean, you're not going to extend him the qualifying offer because of what it would be as the former number 2 overall pick. But the possibility of letting him go into unrestricted free agency and maybe offering him a minimum deal or something close to it is now becoming a little bit more interesting. I've said in the past that I would really rather focus on just a backup big that is a great defender that you can bring up off the bench. But like, James Wiseman in this recent stretch has looked like a better rim protector than Jalen Duren. We've already talked about the defensive stuff, so it's not as much of a slight on Duren as it is like Wiseman's looked better defensively as well on top of everything else he's been doing. So I mean, yeah, I think that his recent stretch has definitely made the conversation of bringing him back more interesting. It also depends on like who the Pistons can go out and get on the free agent market. If there is someone better that will come in and be that backup big, be comfortable in that role. But I at least think like what Wiseman's been doing has definitely made it a conversation compared to in the past where I was just like, no, like, I don't think so. What do you think?
I feel bad because I think I'm going to pour some cold water on this whole James Wiseman hype train that's been going on.
Too much and recency bias.
Look, a little bit of recency bias. Look, guys, you could go back on our YouTube page and you could find me talking last offseason very early on, very, very positively and very forgiving for James Wiseman. So I say this with a strong record of being open to the James Wiseman idea. Okay.
Can vouch for that too.
Blake can vouch for me. He can vouch for me. But here's the thing. The play that he's done over this 4-game stretch, I don't want to take it away from him because he's been so much better than he was. It's not like incredible basketball. He's playing like a solid backup big. And he's so effectively, he's not been a negative. I think in each of the past 4 games, he's either been neutral or a positive. Against the Raptors, probably more of a neutral. He made a decent amount of defensive mistakes, also made up for them with a few blocked shots, a few nice offensive rebounds and dunks. So neutral. He was very, very good in the few games before that. And then the 2 games, so now, you know, going all the way back to like a 6-game sample, what was probably more neutral to slightly negative. My point is, he's not like establishing himself as a core piece of the future. What he's doing is showing that he still has a lot of potential as an NBA player and as a backup big man. And I think that's legit. All right. And I'm going to stand by what I said last week. And that's that he's not going to play well enough for you to pick up that qualifying offer. There's no way that that's going to be worth it. So he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. And the question at that point is whether you want to keep him around as a developmental third big. He's shown a lot. He's shown that he's got a lot of physical potential, right? He's showing now that he can manifest it in a positive play on the court. So the question for you is, hey, is that worth keeping around on a small contract for 1 or 2 years to see if maybe he can take that backup five role away from a guy like Isaiah Stewart, who we kind of assume and have penciled into that backup role. And I'm comfortable with that, but it's four games that he's done this. Do you know what I mean? Like he's played like a very solid backup five for four games. And I don't want to take it away because he's been so inconsistent. But at the same time, it's four games. So I want to pump the brakes.
It's also happening in like the perfect stretch that it needs to be happening for us to have this conversation. It something with him, like even going back to when the Pistons acquired him last season, it was always just putting like consistent stretches together, showing improvement consistently over X amount of games. So, I think the last however many games are left in the season are really just about seeing if that improvement is sustainable over time. If it is, I think it makes it really interesting on whether the Pistons want to retain him. Like we've heard Monty Williams say all the things about how he loves his attitude and everything like that. So it seems like he is valued. It's just about, it truly does seem like it is about the player he is on the floor, what he's doing. If he's showing improvement, it mainly defensively for me, because this team needs good defensive centers. Like that's just is what it is. And if your long-term like bigs are Durant, Stewart and Wiseman, like Stewart's a good defender. We know that. Like Wiseman has shown some good like rim protection flashes over the past stretch, but is that enough to take away the defensive concerns for this team moving forward? Like, I'm not sure it is, but if Wiseman continues to show it, he can make that conversation on retaining him on a smaller number interesting.
Yeah, exactly. And so the question that James Wiseman's going to get a chance to answer here is, do we get 20 games of neutral to net positive James Wiseman? Or is this just going to be a little flash in the pan for 2 weeks? I don't know. I hope it's the former, not the latter. But we're going to find out. So really quickly, KeepCon asked this one earlier. It's a good one. Neither of us have an answer for it, though. Any news on the health of Asar Thompson? No. Hopefully he's not going to be out too long. Sounds like it's a respiratory illness mixed with some asthma problems, which just gets dicey for cardio workouts and recovery. So, which obviously basketball is. So hopefully he's not going to miss too much more time, but no news from us on that one. But this was a good question here from El Blues, is talking about Cade Cunningham. He says, lately, Cade has been shooting the three at a much better rate than anyone in his draft class shoots them at a good volume. And that's true. He's been shooting incredible from three since the All-Star break. So what has this stretch made you think about the development of Cade Cunningham as a three-point shooter?
It's encouraging. Like, I feel like you can't look at it any differently. The three-point shot was a concern when he was a rookie, and then in that short stretch of games he had in year two before going out with injury. And I feel like he's shown that he can shoot the ball on a decent, like a very good clip on decent volume over time. And he just gets to like points in these games in this stretch where the Pistons are stringing some wins together, that when he puts shots up, like when you're watching the game, you're pretty confident that it's going to drop for him. It just looks good. He's hunting shots, taking the right ones, getting to his spots, probably not getting the amount of foul calls that we want him to get. But he is he's just shooting the ball extremely well. And that was one thing in year one and year two that we wanted to see him improve on. Maybe it was the the shin injury that was bothering him was messing with something with his jump shot. Like, I just think that there's no way to come out of what Cade Cunningham has been doing than to be encouraged that he can be a very good and like possibly even like elite scorer and shooter in this league, which we didn't always know that for sure.
Yeah. So Laz Jackson, DB Beer, and if you guys, again, another Twitter call out, we're just throwing them all out today. But if you guys aren't following him, reading his stuff,
yes,
you should. He's great. We love Laz here. But on the Pistons pulse, he brought up that Cade Cunningham, this increase in three-point efficiency, a lot of it's been off pull-up jumpers. And what that is doing for Cade is making teams go over on ball screens for him, because if they go under, he's been punishing them. And that opens up everything for his game. We know it's been talked about for all 3 years that he's been in Detroit that he's not this nuclear athlete, right, that Jalen Green was. He's not going to posterize a bunch of guys every night, right? So he's got to be more methodical. Just getting that initial advantage on the screen and roll is absolutely huge for his game. And I think we've been seeing that, because as soon as this shift has happened, it's resulted in an incredible leap in scoring efficiency for him, just overall, not just from the three, but even from the floor, where he's shooting a better percentage now than he was earlier on in the season. So what's interesting to me is that, you know, if we flash back all the way to that draft class, most people and draft analysts that are very well respected looked at Cade Cunningham as a very good shooting prospect. His form looked good. He shot a good free throw percentage. And the shots that he was taking at Oklahoma State, they were difficult, and he was shooting a respectable percentage on them. But we didn't see it translate right away to the NBA, and even into early on this season, it didn't really translate. So it's just really, really encouraging that he's kind of becoming what everyone thought he was. And it's proving the concept that, yeah, once he gets the shot to, you know, not be 50%, that's not going to stay, but 38 to 40, right? If he can be that consistently for multiple seasons, that's going to open up everything for him, and he's going to be a pretty incredible offensive player. So yeah, I'm with you. I don't know how you couldn't be encouraged. It's been so fun to watch.
Yeah, just like, I mean, just so good, like, in general, like, guys like that, guys who can score and just like do the things that he does, I like, don't come around too often. Like, he's a guy that you, like, there's a ton of debate on, like, number one picks are always going to be scrutinized, but I feel like he's showing that he is, like, worthy of that and, like, in that conversation and should be with the rest of the guys that are heralded across the league as number one, like, franchise cornerstones. Like, I know the wins are coming along, like, recently, but I know we're in the midst of a horrible season. But I think, like, once, if they ever are able to get to that point where they're competing for a playoff spot, they're competing for a title, like, Cade is going to be, like, very well respected across the league for the things he does. And people are going to see it. We see it. Everyone else will, I think.
Cade proving beyond a shadow of a doubt this season that he's the guy they need to build this whole thing around. Not that he's going to win a championship or he's going to take this team all the way. We obviously don't know that. Yeah. But he's proven beyond a doubt that if they want to be competitive, he's the guy you circle and you build everything out around. And if there's any silver lining to this season, that's far and away the best one, in my opinion. That answered the single biggest question that all of us had coming into the year, right? He had the injury history. He wasn't a great efficient scorer. He was turnover prone. He's answered all the questions. So take solace in that one. We've at least got a guy in Detroit that we can build around for a while, and that's exciting to me. So let's end on this one. I'm going to call an audible. I hope you're ready for it. I'm not even ready for it, so we'll see how it goes. At HR Moroz asks us what our top five big board for the Pistons specifically would be right now. So I thought this would be a fun one to end on. You go first because I only have four right now.
Yeah, and shout out to our guy Harry for this question. I actually don't know if he asked it specifically for us to discuss on the show, but Wes, I really wanted to hear your answer because I wanted to know where a certain someone was on your board. So we'll find out. And I'm sure you know who I'm talking about because it's someone that we've talked about
at great length.
So we'll let everyone know once I find out. But where I'm at for the Pistons specifically right now is Zachary Risache, number one, the combo wing that's playing with Borg in France right now. Alex Sarr, big man who's playing in the NBL in Australia. Cody Williams from Colorado at three. Matas Buzelis with G League Ignite at four. And Reed Shepard, the freshman smaller guard from Kentucky at number five. Questions with fit with Sarr and Reed specifically, just because Reed's a small guard. You have Caden Ivey. Do you have to potentially move on from Ivy to make that work? Sarr, same thing, but with Jalen Duren. But I think both are like really good players and intriguing enough to at least have that conversation. So that's where I'm at right now. Wes, really interested to see where you are as well.
Yeah, so I'm going to give my five. Well, it's actually a four because I'm just going to be honest with you guys. I'm still very early in this process. I've only got four for the Pistons. I do have one guy that I'm kind of out on already, and I want to ask you about Buzelis in a little bit once I give this one out. But number one for me, Alex Sarr. I think the defensive potential is just too good to pass up. And I actually would have a tier break behind him. So number one, Sarr. And then there's a group of three guys that I kind of have fairly equal. I think if I had to rate them, it would probably be Cody Williams, Risache, and then Reed Shepard. I wouldn't quibble much about switching any of those three. I think they're all roughly the same caliber of prospect at this point. And then, like I said, I don't have a fifth yet. I'm still working my way down the board. So my question to you is, the other day I was watching a few games of Matas Buzelis. I was not having a lot of fun. Can you give me the pitch on this guy? I know G League Ignite, it's been a pretty terrible context. So, you know, give me and give the listeners some things to watch for. That you watch for anyway when you were breaking them down as positives and as negatives as a prospect.
Yeah, so Matas is an interesting one because he was like towards the top of this class going into this season, like the college season, G League season, whatever. The G League Ignite are just a mess. Like it's a developmental program, a mixture of guys who are going to be in the NBA draft this year, next year, and then some like veterans who are really there to just help with that development and everything. They are like far and away, like just the roster is not built correctly. They're having a horrible season, just call it what it is, like in terms of the standings and everything. But that's not what they're built to do. They're built to develop these guys. The encouraging thing about Buzelis is he has improved over the season. And especially like recently, he's still not shooting the ball great. As one of the top prospects in high school, like a big thing with him is he shot crazy efficiently. Like if you want to look back to those high school numbers or not, like great, that's fine. But yeah, the shot didn't look good when he started with the G League. It's come along a little bit, still not looking great, but just everything else. And it's really like his size. He has that archetype to be the wing, and he's like, I mean, 6'10", if not, he's like 6'9". He has that length to really be a wing that you're looking for in this league. He's a interesting one just because of the context that he's playing in. There's also Ron Holland in the G League Ignite program that was playing with him at the start of the year. Holland's out for the rest of the year with injury. So in their last like at probably 6 or 7 games that the Ignite has, it'll be really interesting to watch him and see if he can string a few games together where he's shooting the ball well. But I think with him right now, just at his size, what the improvement he's shown, it's really like an upside swing, I guess you can say, for the Pistons. If they really, like, if they fall to 5 in the lottery and they really want to focus on a wing and Reese Hoshea and Cody Williams are gone, like, Bouzelis isn't any consolation prize to anything like that. Like, so he's shown flashes and he has an opportunity to improve. Tough season in the context he's playing in, but still has like the tools and the size to at least be intriguing as a top tier draft prospect.
All right, one more guy I want to ask you about before we close it down, because look, he's an older prospect. He in any year probably wouldn't be a high-end lottery guy. But if there were ever a year to consider just making a purely fit-based pick, this might be it. So why don't you give us a rundown just quickly of a guy that probably fits like a glove with this roster and next to Cade Cunningham, and that's Connect.
Yeah. So Dalton Connect with Tennessee. So he's a graduate senior, and he transferred to Tennessee this year from Northern Colorado. He started on like the JUCO path. And what, okay, like, first of all, the pitch with Connect is like, he's putting, like, he dropped 40 points the other night. Like, the things he's doing, the way he can score the ball are like crazy. Like, there's going to be a role for him in the NBA. The question with him is the defense. And I mean, obviously, as a graduate, you're not like he can still get better, but it's not like you're drafting a 18 or 19 year old prospect. The thing that I like with him is he went to Tennessee specifically to improve as a defender. He still has a ton of questions, but like, I like that he's making that a priority in his game. Definitely nothing close to a finished product. It's something that he needs to address, but he at least knows that he needs to address it and is working on that now before he's even in the pre-draft process or with an organization. I do wonder a bit about when he's in the NBA and is in a lesser role and doesn't have as many scoring opportunities, like what role he's going to be. But just in general, he seems to have like a different gear when you're watching his games. Like, he just takes games over, really. I mean, he's played his way into the lottery, if not like top 10 range, and you never know what team could like him. So he would be a great fit. I'm not sure if he'll be in the range where the Pistons are. Like, it may be a bit too rich for them. But yeah, like you said, definitely a great fit.
I do have a little bit of an agenda on this one, and I've got to admit it. And it's because of the guy that he kind of reminds me of when I watch him. And that was a player that the Suns drafted in the lottery. Monty Williams was a coach at the time, I believe so anyway. So you know that he probably had something to do with it. And that's Cam Johnson, who was also a 23-year-old rookie and very much probably a better defender, I would say, coming out, but offensively kind of similar. I don't know. Something to think about as we enter into draft season. Guys, we're going to wrap it up. I apologize. We had so many great questions, and we didn't get to all of them. We even missed one in the live chat from Keep Con. So shout out to you, man. We appreciate it. We apologize for not hitting on it. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in and for all these questions as well. So yeah, that's going to do it for us. And Blake, wrap it on up, my friend.
Yeah, thank you all again. And thank you, Wes, for letting me rant about a couple prospects at the end there. We'll definitely get into some more draft stuff as we get towards the end of the season and into the off season, definitely. But we'll wrap it up here. Special thanks to Sean Corp, managing editor of Detroit Bad Boys, for supporting the show. And seriously, shout out to you guys for all the great questions. Like Wes said, we had so many this week. We couldn't even get to them all. We really appreciate all the talking points that you gave us tonight. We couldn't do it without that. So thank you and keep them coming. We'll catch you next week, whether on your commute or live with us here on YouTube. We can't wait to talk more Detroit basketball with you all.